Will the Judiciary Committee please come to order? Present are Senator Collins, Senator Adams, Senator Rhodey, and myself, Senator Halford. We have before us for its first hearing Senate Joint Resolution Number 1, Constitutional Amendment. Prime sponsor is Senator Rhodey. Senator Rhodey, would you explain the proposal? And we are on teleconference. I'm sorry, I didn't have the mic going.
Mr. President, this is an old friend that most members of the committee are familiar with. The difficulty that this resolution is trying to cure goes back to an old federal case of many years ago that held that the right to keep and bear arms relates not to individuals in the state, but to the militia. And over the course of the years, there's been a great body of commentary by legal scholars that this is indeed the better view, if you will, that the right to bear arms that we have in our state constitution does not apply to individual Alaskans. If you polled individual Alaskans, they would neither agree with that interpretation or agree with the result of that, but the right to bear arms that we have in our constitution merely guarantees the National Guard or militia to keep and bear arms. I think that's at odds with the thinking of our founding fathers, also the thinking of a vast majority of Alaskans. As a consequence, I've introduced this resolution, this is not the first year, that would make it clear that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right. I won't give you a long speech because there are people here to testify. There have been a number of comments that this will wipe out the state's criminal law. That flat is not the truth. The people that maintain that view are either ignorant of the law or choose to ignore it. I note in one of the memorandums, speaking of lack of knowledge of the law, they talk about this changing things such as hand grenades and silencers, which are covered by federal law in any event, and are not a main concern of this this amendment, but they're covered by federal law in any event. But the fact of the matter is, language similar to this has been heard by a number of Supreme Courts of other states, and never, and I repeat, absolutely never, have the results that the opponents of this resolution seek to advance has succeeded. The fact of the matter is, those people who have been critical of it have absolutely no legal background to support their contention other than it might happen. And that's not good enough, because I have enough confidence in our Supreme Court that I don't believe they're going to reach an irrational decision, and none of the other Supreme Courts of this country have reached an irrational decision on this point. We have all of the law is in favor of the supporting the approach that we have here today. And with that, there are people here to testify in my talk. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adams, you have a question?
Yes, I have several questions to the sponsor of this legislation. And I see that Senator Collins and I do have similar amendments that I had sent yesterday, and she has presented the same amendment. But the question to the sponsor of this piece of legislation, is there a problem in the state of Alaska that we're trying to fix with this bill? As we can see by the public safety statement here, that Alaska and Vermont has the least restrictive in firearm laws, and there's nothing I see that there's laws to change this. What are we trying to do or change in Alaska here?
The best time to change a constitutional amendment, as you recall, Senators, looking back at subsistence, is not when a problem occurs, but before that problem occurs, and to do it in a calm, rational, even-handed fashion before a crisis occurs. When a crisis occurs, it becomes much more difficult, as I'm sure you're aware, to make that change, and that's why I have proposed making this change before we have a rush of events that compel us to do so.
Take the rifles away from NRA. Since we need to show a compelling state interest in enacting any legislation, how do we demonstrate the wish not to disturb the status quo without doing that by virtue of passing this piece of legislation? Won't the courts look at this action or the changed status of the law before and after as trying to change a situation from what it was?
The courts look at the commentary and the legislative record that we develop, and it's clear that none of us, Senator, you nor I nor anyone else that I know of, wish to disturb the existing statutes that relate to the use of firearms. And we're not changing the law. We're putting this forward to the people of Alaska to see if they wish to change the law. One has to have some measure of confidence in our court system not to reach illogical conclusions. And based on the evidence, I don't think they would.
Then if this particular piece of legislation passes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, could cities still have or make ordinance that, let's say, prevent the carrying of concealed weapons?
We do not have a concealed weapons statute now at the state level. This would require all of the laws to be uniform, and it would ensure that whatever the firearms laws are, they're uniform across the state.
Then how does this balance against the powers granted to boroughs and cities in Article 10, Section 11 of our Constitution that says that the cities can exercise all legislative powers not prohibited by law?
There are many legislative powers that are prohibited by law or in some way mandated by the legislature, whether you're talking about criminal law, whether you're talking about environmental law, whether you're talking about civil law. In fact, the vast bulk of our law is encompassed in the state statutes, not in the various municipal codes around the state.
Two states have passed a constitutional amendment, West Virginia and Nebraska. Can you explain what has happened and after they pass a law, the constitutional amendment?
Exactly what you had alluded to earlier was feared, and in neither case did that come about. Was there a complete abolition of all penalties and laws related to firearms?
Last year, the legislature passed a law making a felony if somebody violated a domestic relationship restraining order and the person possessed a deadly weapon during this act. If the constitutional amendment passes, could the legislature still enact laws such as the one we did last year?
Yes.
Okay. Given what our Supreme Court did in the interpretation of our privacy clause in relationship to marijuana possession, how do you think that they would interpret any laws that we had to do on the books relating to the possessions of handgun, for instance, by felons?
If it were a part of the statutory prohibition, it's my firm belief that they would uphold that statute. And no one can cite any evidence to the contrary.
If we intend to retain the authority to allow legislature to make laws regarding gun possessions and use, why not state that directly in the amendment that is handed out by Senator Collins and myself?
Why don't, if I can respond, why don't we amend the First Amendment to say that everyone has the right of free speech unless we make a law to the contrary, including the press? I wouldn't agree with that, and I wouldn't. That's why I cannot agree with your amendment. I know it's well-intentioned, sir, but it has the effect of negating the amendment.
Last year, the Attorney General's office, and we're happy to have our man here with us, and I quote, implore the Senate Judiciary's Committee to add language that would reserve the right of the legislature to reasonably regulate arms. Is the opinion of the current Attorney General the same as last year's?
I have no idea.
Okay.
He doesn't have an opinion.
He doesn't have an opinion. How do you define arms? Switchblades? Are they arms? Gravity knives? Plastic guns? What is your definition of arms?
The definition of arms is located in the statute.
Mr. Chairman, the last thing I have is a fiscal note is not here for this piece of legislation. Anytime we have a constitutional amendment, normally a fiscal note would come along with that of approximately
$11,000.
2,200.
2,200?
Yeah, 2,200.
There will be a fiscal note for it.
There will be one. Then I assume this bill is not going to leave committee today?
I believe.
It's not in our packs, and that's why I was.
They were carried about. There is a fiscal note from Division of Elections, make some more copies. They were distributed. I don't know if they didn't get them.
What's the amount?
I didn't get one.
There's been three or four amendments to the
2.2.
Supplements that have been carried out. Some of these things have just come in the last few hours.
Mr. Chairman, after the people have a chance to testify, I would yield to for her to pass out that amendment. It's exactly the same, and so we will debate this after public hearing, I suppose.
Okay, what I would like to do, Senator Adams, is go to the departments of public safety and law, and then go to public testimony. We'll go departments of public safety and law, and then public testimony from organizations and then from individuals. So do we have somebody here from public safety? Are you still the deputy?
As of today.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Gail Horetsky. I'm the deputy commissioner from the Department of Public Safety. Richard Burton is the commissioner, I'm sure you're aware, he was recently appointed. And Commissioner Burton is very familiar with this issue. He was commissioner before and remained active in law enforcement issues, including membership on the Chiefs of Police Association, where this issue has been discussed repeatedly over the last few years. I hope that you have in your packets a position paper signed by Commissioner Burton just this morning, expressing his views regarding the proposed amendment and also whether or not any change at all is needed in the state constitution. I am here to answer questions if there are any, Mr. Chairman. I really think our position is stated fairly well in the position paper, and I would like to hear the testimony from the other people, but I'm at the committee's pleasure.
Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Adams.
Public safety's position on this particular, the department opposes this piece of legislation, correct?
That's absolutely correct, Mr. Chairman.
Going back on two states that I had said that after passage of this in Nebraska and the other state, have you researched those on the passage of those?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Adams, I know that someone from the Department of Law is here. It's my recollection that in Nebraska, two lower court cases struck down some of their gun laws following the amendment of that state's constitution. I believe just recently, like within the last month or so, the Nebraska Supreme Court has ruled that the lower courts were incorrect in that interpretation, thus restoring those question laws. This kind of uncertainty is one of the things that I think we are concerned about. If the laws are struck down at the lower court and you do go up to the Supreme Court and it may be, two or three years later, maybe the law is restored, maybe it isn't. But in the meantime, the people haven't been prosecuted, the state of the law is unclear, you have the additional expense. And I guess I don't share Senator Rohde's confidence that we can count on the courts to always make the decision that we think is the right one. I'm sure they do the best they can, but we certainly have been surprised in the past by some of the decisions by the appellate courts in the state. And I think that the sensible thing is to state clearly what you intend to do, and if you intend to allow continued regulation by the state or a municipal subdivision, reasonable regulation of firearms, I think that there is absolutely no harm in saying so. And that has been our position all along.
One more question.
Senator Adams, okay.
Do you believe if the passage of an amendment, the constitutional amendment, such as this, that you lose local control, that if cities may well want to pass ordinance against such things as concealed weapons, but could not do so?
Mr. Chairman, let me look at which of these. I know there's two different resolutions. I want to make sure I'm addressing the correct one. It says, shall not be denied or infringed by the state or a political subdivision of the state. It's hard for me to say with any assurance, sir, what would happen. If the court is going to hold, as one of the senators has asserted, if the court is going to hold that this does not preclude reasonable regulation by the state, then I suppose the same theory would be that it wouldn't preclude reasonable regulation by the municipalities. Our concern is that it would preclude such reasonable regulation, and that concern applies both to political subdivisions and to the state itself. I hope that's clear. It's kind of convoluted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I feel like I'm being caught between two lawyers.
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Rohde is an attorney, and obviously you're an attorney, and you know, his concern is that if we do pass the amendment that Senator Adams and I have looked at and the one that you suggested, that really negates the resolution. What's your response to that argument?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I haven't seen the senator's proposed amendment, so I can't comment on that.
Senator Adams.
Would that accept as provided by law?
Yes, you have. You just haven't seen it.
It's one you have seen before.
Amendment.
After the Mr. Chairman, I have seen this language before. Now that I look at it, I realize I have seen it before. And it's my recollection that the Department of Law in previous hearings has stated that this language would be sufficient to allow continued regulation by the state, regulated by law being broad enough to allow statutes, regulations, local ordinances, etc. So I think that the adoption of this language would cure our objections. We still don't know why it needs to be changed, but I really think that this language would cure our objections.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So your opinion is that the amendment then would resolve your concern. Okay, the second question I asked, will it negate, as Senator Rohde says, the whole purpose of the resolution? Does it have that effect?
Mr. Chairman, I really don't think it's fair to ask me to speak for Senator Rohde.
I'm not asking you to speak for him. I'm asking you to respond to his statement that the amendment, if it were to be adopted, would negate, in fact, the resolution in total.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the avowed purpose of the amendment is to make it clear that this is an individual constitutional right as opposed to a militia-related collective right. And if that, in fact, is the purpose of the amendment, then I don't see how your proposed change to the amendment would do away with the purpose of it. The purpose of it still is that this is an individual constitutional right. It's not related to armies. It's not related to militia. And so it belongs to each person. That means it still could be reasonably regulated the way we now say felons can't have certain guns, minors can't have certain guns, crazy people can't do certain things. They still have, people have individual rights, but the law has a right to reasonably draw regulations for the common good. And I think that this language would allow that to happen.
So in a sense, the amendment really just reaffirms some of the things that we are already doing.
Mr. Chairman, in my opinion, the language that's proposed to the amendment would allow us to continue on with the law as it is now. And I think that everybody, the sponsors included, say that that is what we want to do, continue on reasonably regulating.
Thank you.
Senator Rohde.
I have to ask this question. Since we're talking about the Second Amendment, would you favor language like the amendment to be tucked into the First Amendment? Freedom of speech. And make that permissible depending upon what the legislature does.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see any reason why that couldn't be done. I'll come back to what I said earlier. I don't see any reason why it should be done. And I don't see any reason why this should be done either. So we just come from a different starting point.
Hey, I've got a question. Just, you know, as someone that we've seen in committees for years, public safety and law, do you believe that the right listed in the Constitution currently is an individual right or a collective right with regard to militia?
Mr. Chairman, are you asking for my personal opinion? As opposed to what I think the Supreme Court would rule?
Well, I'll ask you for first your personal opinion, and second, what you think the Supreme Court would rule.
Well, I think the second one is an easier question. The language, as you know, sir, the language of our Constitution is virtually identical to the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And although we don't have a Supreme Court ruling on this, there are numerous lower court federal rulings, interpretations of that language. And I think that it's quite likely that our Supreme Court, our state Supreme Court, would look to the federal case law when construing what is, after all, identical language in our state constitution. So I think, I learned long ago never to try to predict those courts because, you know, you never can. But if I had to guesstimate sitting here today, I would say probably they would be likely to rule that it's a collective right.
Even though the same, you know, the doctrine of the simplest language and the doctrine that a constitutional amendment is generally interpreted to be what the people thought they were voting on at the time they were voting on has 200 years in between those two periods. And what do the people of Alaska think, and what did they think when they voted on the Constitution? Did they think it was collective or think it was individual?
Mr. Chairman, we're really off in speculative land here. The language of the state constitution says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And I don't know what Mr. Kendall and the other founding fathers of Alaska thought when they voted for that, but there was a reference to we need a militia sometimes maybe, so therefore you can't take our guns away. And I think that there was a link up in their mind between know, the common defense and the common right to keep and bear arms.
So in your opinion, there is no guarantee in the state constitution of Alaska of an individual right to keep and bear arms?
Well, you know, this is what's so troubling. I don't know how our court would rule on that. All I can point out to you is that the language is identical to the federal constitution.
It seems that you've made the best argument for the consideration of this amendment that could be made.
Well, Mr. Andrews comes unglued every time I say this, and so, you know, I'll apologize to him in advance. Mr. Chairman, I would have bet you several thousand dollars a decade ago that there's no way in earth that our state Supreme Court would rule that you can smoke marijuana in your own home because we passed a constitutional right to privacy. I mean, no one ever predicted that that result would occur, including the people who pulled the ballot level to vote for that amendment. So, you know, how can any of us possibly predict what the court is going to hold? It's a losing proposition.
Mr. Chairman, I just note that on this issue, this is one of the few points that Ms. Retzke and I agree on. I do agree with her statement that there is a compelling body of law. If you read the journals and the cases, while I may not necessarily agree with them, I have to agree that that is probably the, quote, the better view, the majority view. Phrase it how you will. We do agree on that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Do you believe that this proposed amendment takes the gun control issue away from the legislature and put it in the hands of the judiciary?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the passage of this proposed amendment, unless the language is altered, would place in danger all existing gun laws in the state of Alaska and adopted by locals. Does that answer your question, sir?
In court hearings, then, who would the court listen to it? Would it be the intent of the legislature in taking the minutes of this particular meeting, or would they know the intent of the voters when they vote on a constitutional amendment? Whose intent would the judiciary look at?
Mr. Chairman, that I feel fairly confident to be able to answer, sir. The election pamphlet comes out, of course, before each election, and they have a pro and con statement or explanation of ballot propositions. And our court has held in cases involving other amendments and statutes that it is the intent of the adopting agency. In that case, it would be the voters, not the legislature. Now, if the legislature adopted a statute, then you look to the intent of the legislature. But if it is the people who, themselves who are adopting a measure, you look to the people's intent as stated by the voter pamphlet and any other, you know, public documents regarding it.
If I could follow up on that, because we do agree on this, a statement, and we have a great hand in the statement that goes into the voter's pamphlet, a statement that it is not the intent to wipe from the face of the statute all existing statutory controls on firearms, would have a significant impact on how the court would view it, presuming that it's what is in the voter pamphlet.
Just one clarification. Any intent or explanation would not be on the ballot itself. You know, the voters wouldn't have that in front of them. It would be in a pamphlet or explanatory material.
Correct. Then my final question, then, how would the voters know what our intent was when we passed this legislation here?
Mr. Chairman, the voters wouldn't care about your intent, sir. They would be looking at whether or not they should adopt this change to the Constitution. I imagine that most voters would read the language of the ballot proposition itself and decide. Some conscientious voters, you know, read through the election pamphlet ahead of time. I don't think by any means all.
Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do we have someone here from the Department of Law? Could you join us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Margo Knuth, and I'm with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And we have submitted today a letter signed by Mr. Guanelli, Assistant Attorney General, that expresses the Department of Law's view on this legislation.
Thank you. Questions from the committee?
Yes.
Senator Adams?
Is your position still the same as last year on this legislation? I quote from your office, it implores the Senate Judicial Committee to add language that reserve the right of the legislature to reasonably regulate arms?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is still our position.
Okay. Do we have that in writing again?
It is not in exactly the same language, but the desire to see an amendment that would allow or explicitly recognize regulation is part of our intent still, our position.
And your position is?
Our primary position would be that the Constitution not be amended at all. But if this resolution is to go forward, that it be amended to explicitly recognize the right of the state or political subdivision to regulate the manner in which arms may be kept, borne, or used.
The local control?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from the committee? With regard to the position that was delivered to the committee today, the first statement of the Department of Law's position seems to be the opposite interpretation of the Deputy Commissioner of Public Safety and the Senator Rohde, in that it is the interpretation, and I'll read this. In a wide variety of contexts, the Alaska Supreme Court has interpreted the state's constitution as providing broader protection for individual rights than does the federal constitution. We believe the court would interpret the existing right to bear arms provision in the state constitution in a similarly broad manner and thus satisfy the proponents' concerns about the potential for overregulation without the need for amendment. So it appears that does the Department of Law think that the constitutionally protected right in the current constitution is an individual right?
It is, I think, a degree of speculation. Were we predicting? First, I heard reference to an opinion. Was it by the Alaska Supreme Court that at some time in the past indicated this right is only for the militia? Or was that a reference to an opinion from some other court?
I think that's other court.
Would it surprise you if I told you that your own office developed an opinion approximately 4 years ago that said this right was a collective right and not an individual right, in language similar to that employed by Ms. Horevsky and myself in terms of the majority or better view of compiled law for the past 30 years.
I do not know what we may have said.
That was your position. If you wish to change your position at this time, order obviously free to do so. But that was an official Attorney General's opinion.
I don't feel that I have sufficient information
I'm being facetious in a way and will cross-examine you. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of the author of that opinion. It was in the Panoramic View case.
Gail?
Joe Gelda.
Joe Gelda, yes.
Panoramic View.
I don't feel able to speak to that.
Okay. Obviously, that opinion doesn't square with the letter. But
well, it does appear that the current opinion as of January 31st is that the court would take a more expansive view of individual rights.
I believe that is the better reasoned prediction.
That seems to be their number one reason not to pass this. And if that's the number one reason, obviously this can't do any harm because it's already the case.
The Department of Law's concern is that the constitutional amendment, if it does not explicitly acknowledge this body's ability to regulate the possession and use of firearms, that we're going to lose that ability and that it's going to have a very significant impact on law enforcement.
Can you cite any case in any jurisdiction that's been upheld to its highest level of appeal in which that's occurred?
No, I cannot. I can tell you three states that had trial court level decisions invalidating criminal statutes. In addition to West Virginia and Nebraska, Maine has gone through a similar experience where they at the trial level said one of our criminal laws, I think in that case it was a felon in possession law also, must be unconstitutional, and it had to go all the way through the appellate court procedure before they went back to the status quo that everybody had thought they were going to have from the get-go. So you do have this period of hiatus where people did not know what the law was. They were acting as though it was unconstitutional for a while. And the confusion that it created in those states is something that we would like to see avoided in Alaska.
But in each case, as it went to the appellate level, the right to regulate was upheld after the passage of a constitutional change.
The three states that I know about. In fact, in West Virginia, the highest court did rule initially that the constitutional amendment narrowed the legislature's ability to regulate in this area. They came out with another opinion after that seemed to back off somewhat from that. But I'm not an expert in West Virginia law, and I'm not able to tell you with great certainty what the status of their law is right now.
But today, someone defending against a concealed weapons charge could bring a defense based on the opinion that was just delivered to the committee. Could they not just as easily as a constitutional change?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Well, I mean, it would seem that if you were represented by free counsel and had the opportunity to read an opinion that said that the Supreme Court would probably view the right as an individual right and were being charged with something that was contrary to that in an absolute sense, that you would go ahead and appeal and might still at the lower court level cause the same confusion as a constitutional change.
There is greater uncertainty when you amend the Constitution because there is a presumption that you're trying to accomplish something with the amendment, that you are trying to change the law, that you're trying to change the status quo. And right now, with these gun regulatory laws being on the books, if you're amending the Constitution, why are you doing it if you don't mean to change something? And so it's that amendment that makes us concerned about what happens to our existing regulations of firearms.
Thank you. Further questions by the committee?
One more question.
Senator Adams.
Is this amendment that is happening today, if the passage of this in states like you mentioned, Nebraska, West Virginia, Maine, is it the way that perhaps criminals are appealing their cases off a death row and the criminal to get free, utilizing this constitutional amendment in those particular states?
I don't have enough information to be able to say.
Okay. I don't know of any state where there's a death penalty.
They're appealing. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I don't have a sign-up sheet for here in Juneau. Do we have, I suppose we could take representatives of organizations. I know this has been an NRA priority. Why don't we go ahead and get the NRA out of the way, and then we'll go to the sites and come back to here. But we do have a sign-up sheet there.
Yes, I believe I'm the first one on the sign-up sheet anyway.
Okay, you win.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Rip Andrews, and I do represent the National Rifle Association in Alaska as their field representative. The resolution before you is an old friend. It's passed the Senate 3 times, and we're looking at the 4th try on it. The comments that I've heard today at this committee more than ever convinced me we should have an amendment to our Constitution to clarify the individual right. What I heard first is that we should take the rifles away from the NRA members in Alaska, and there's 25,000 of them, and they may want to write you about that, Senator Adams.
Send the letters.
And then I heard the Department of Law say we should have an amendment that would allow a Morton Grove type of ordinance where local communities could ban lawful legal citizens from the ownership of firearms. That's precisely why we want this amendment and why we want it clarified that the individual right is a constitutional right, like every Alaskan believes that it is and has ever since statehood. And I've been here since statehood, and I guess most of you have too. We start out on this thing as a housekeeping operation, and we didn't want to get involved in it except that there was an attorney general's opinion in 1983. I guess that's what it was. I have it right here in front of me. And when we went back to the Constitutional Convention and the minutes of that convention, we found there were no minutes. And then I personally had to go to the chairman of that, Senator Vic Fisher. He was in the Senate at that time, who told me that the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which in our Constitution tracks that very closely, has held for 175 years, and they saw no reason to discuss it, and that's why it went. What I'm saying is that the committee members of the Constitutional Convention did believe that there was an individual right to own and bear firearms. And that does not mean that there should not be reasonable regulation of firearms. There is no constitutional guarantee for American citizens to own paramilitary weapons, mortars, cannons, etc., flamethrowers, you name it. But the reasonable regulation, I heard a discussion briefly here about the West Virginia opinion. West Virginia is a state that has a constitutional amendment guaranteeing individual right to own firearms. A statute was passed concerning the purchase and ownership of handguns in West Virginia. A suit was brought, and that statute was struck down because it was unreasonable. What the statute provided for is that in West Virginia, if you were of the mind to purchase a handgun, first, you have to post a $5,000 bond. You have to advertise in the county that you lived in all adjacent counties that have newspapers. You had to get a letter of good moral character from either the sheriff or chief of police. And I want to tell you, in West Virginia, which is a Bible Belt state, if you're an unmarried mother, you will never get a permit or a letter saying you're of good moral character. There are just lots of reasons that was a bad law, and the constitutional amendment worked in that case. It was unreasonable. And that's exactly why the thing was there. We've seen the Nebraska case and the Maine case, Supreme Court cases, where both of those Supreme Courts struck down the defense of people who were convicted on handgun or firearm crimes on the basis that reasonable regulation by the state under the police powers prevailed. There's no hidden agenda here. It's just a straightforward situation of clarifying the individual right. We don't want to make the law enforcement officers in this state's job any more hazardous or more difficult or anything else. We're talking about law-abiding citizens in this state. And I really think that that this is an amendment that we need to get on with. And believe me, there's a great body of Alaskans out there that do support it. And if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them if I could.
Questions by members of the committee? Senator Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Andrews. You indicated that I think one of the words that I got was that there was no opposition to reasonable regulation of firearms, that is part of supporting this amendment and supporting an individual's right to bear arms, that there was no objection from you for some reasonable regulation of firearms. Did I hear that, or did I hear you correctly?
You heard me correctly, that the National Rifle Association has never objected to the reasonable regulation of the ownership, possession, and use of firearms. Mm-hmm. We don't believe that convicted felons should possess them. We don't believe that judged alcoholics or mentally deficient people, those type of people. We don't believe that that juveniles under the legal age, whatever state it's in, 18 or 21 in federal law. And by the way, federal law still exists in firearm control in this state as well as the state statutes. And so, when you start to talk about gun control and firearms and this type of thing, you also have to think in terms of the federal statutes. For example, the 1934 Federal Firearm Act strictly regulates the ownership of automatic firing weapons. It's not illegal to own one, by the way. There's at least 20 here in Juneau. But they must be regulated and they must be registered with the BATF.
Senator Collins.
I was just going to say, given your statement and what I thought I heard, in which you confirmed, you said was that you didn't object to reasonable regulation. I guess, and given that, I don't see any problem in why the amendment proposed by Senator Adams would be detrimental, and that it basically just says, kind of rounds out the resolution, that it says two things. Number one, an individual does have the right to bear arms. But number two, we agree that it's reasonable under some circumstances to regulate that. And I guess I don't see that amendment inconsistent with kind of where you're coming from, is all I'm saying.
To the chair. I haven't seen this amendment yet, Senator Collins. But I would say, and make a quick comment, I've heard the Raven decision discussed. And that's brought quite a bit of heartburn to law enforcement people and agencies of the state because of what they consider a very liberal interpretation of the right to privacy. The acid test of a liberal is how they feel about gun control. A liberal Supreme Court is always going to be more conservative on firearms and gun control. So I just want to lay that to rest right here and now.
Further questions by members of the committee?
Let me just add one thing, Mr. Chair. There is no permit to carry a concealed weapon in the state of Alaska. There isn't any. The only people that can do it are troopers and law enforcement people in their own district. And it can't change until this body changes that and establishes a permit system if they wish to do so.
And persons engaged in outdoor activity.
It is a permissible defense if you are lawfully engaged in outdoor activities such as hunting, fishing, and trapping to carry concealed. And I'm not sure what permissible defense means, but I guess it's okay. And as a fish guide myself, I always carry a handgun. And when you're in waders and it starts to rain, you put a raincoat on, I guess technically you're in violation of this, as it is a concealed weapon at that time. This goes on all over Alaska. Let's not make Alaskans illegal and law-breaking on this particular issue. They don't want to be. But they would like to understand clearly that it is an individual right. And let's get away from the militia business and collective right. Every Alaskan believes it's an individual right, if I'm not wrong. And I've been with this issue now a long time. And as Senator Rohde has, and Senator Halford has. And I guess I'll just leave it there, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. No further questions by members of the committee? I think we'll go ahead and go to the teleconference sites. let's go first to Anchorage for Dwayne Udlin. Are you on?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, if you have any questions, I have to admit, it's hard hearing some of the members on the committee. I'm not sure if they're sitting close enough against the mic. I'd like to thank the committee for the chance to speak with you today. I'm representing the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police. I believe this is the first time that we've had the opportunity to talk with you in the Senate about it. We've done quite a bit of work in the House over the past few years on this issue, and I thank you for this chance. I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to try to make any specific legal argument about the amendment and what it may or may not do. But I would like to point out a couple things, and that when I was listening to the discussion about the other states, one, the language that's being proposed here in Alaska is unique as far as I know. I don't think it's been proposed anywhere else. And secondly, our Constitution is somewhat unique in that it has the privacy clause. And as a layman, that causes us a lot of concern. One thing is about the Chiefs Association, we've been very much against this amendment over the years, and I don't think this language has changed at all. We're not anti-gun. We're not anti-NRA. In fact, arguing against this issue kind of pits us against some of our best friends, I think. And we've been real uncomfortable having to argue against this issue and against some of our best supporters. But you know, there are some specifics that really trouble us and actually frighten us on as far as what the ramifications of this law will mean, or if it passes into law. And I'd like to maybe discuss the issue of preemption a little bit. I know that's high on the agenda, and that I've talked with Wayne Anthony Ross a lot. I've talked with Rube Andrews. I've also talked to some national chiefs would come down on the waiting period if we were asked about it. But I use that by way of example to show you that the real intent of this amendment and the way it is formed is simply to prohibit legislatures and particularly municipalities from regulating firearms at all. And sure, there, I realize that some of the laws have been struck down in other states, they've been challenged, they've gone up through the court system, but most of those have been pretty absurd laws that were struck down by the lower courts. And I'm not aware of any that so far have been challenged on things like waiting periods or concealed weapons or the preemption issue. And one of the frustrating things about this whole issue is that backers of it have kind of a soft sell, and they say, well, gee, you believe that law-abiding citizens should keep and bear firearms. And I think if you ask even police officers across the state, they're going to tell you, yeah, we think they should. I think the committee, the comments from Senators Halford and Brody is correct that the average person in Alaska thinks that they should, law-abiding citizens should keep firearms. The problem is I don't think the amendment as proposed is specific enough. It's way too broad. And to explain that to people, it takes a lot of time. I've discussed this with people who are members of the NRA, people in law enforcement, and I think the average person just does not have enough time or enough inclination to really sit down and study this issue. The serious proposed a change to our Constitution, and I would hope that the legislature, if it is going to propose an amendment, I would certainly hope it would put in there that we can have reasonable regulation. I don't think that's asking too much, and I think it's very important to do that. There's no reason for us to go through the gyrations that other states have had and have it decided in court and the appeals court and on up to the Supreme Court whether or not this amendment means you can reasonably regulate. That's nonsense. If we're really going to have an amendment, then it ought to be nice and clear right up front. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions by members of the committee? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in Anchorage to testify?
No, there's not.
Thank you. We'll go to Glen Allen. Do we have Fred Williams in Glen Allen still online?
No, but I do have Mike Lanigan from the Glen Allen Sporting Goods here who will testify.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you very much. I would like to speak with you very briefly, and I repeat, it will be very brief. I don't want to take any more time than necessary. I'm not speaking to you on behalf of a businessman, although I am one and do thrive to some degree on the firearms industry. I simply would like to make a couple of points, if I might, relevant to a recent petition which was circulated, as I recall, one David M. Oak out of Anchorage had a very like and similar petition going around that was circulated across my business counter, and from the Copper Basin area residents received 215 signatures, which I think probably speaks quite loudly for the local sentiment relevant to the use and control of firearms. As you know, those people who do reside in the bush or the outback parts of the state find it very necessary. We live daily with the use and in the process of firearms for hunting and for sustenance, as well as protection. We do have things out here that bite back. So I'm quite sure, speaking relatively so on behalf of the people of the Copper Basin, that we're very comfortable with supporting this this type of a proposal or a resolution ensuring or attempting to ensure permanent and continuous use and control of firearms for our daily lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anyone else in Glen Allen?
No, there is not. That is all.
Thank you, Glenn Allen. If you want, you can stay online. We'll come back to Juno. Our Ketchikan participants had to leave. Back to Juno, I noticed we've got some reinforcements from the Department of Law. Are there any further comments from the Department of Law?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dean Guanelli. I'm with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. When you invite a lawyer to, you ask the lawyer if they have any comments, you can always pretty much be guaranteed they will.
Well, but in the public sector, you don't get paid by the word.
I had delivered to your office today a letter that I think basically sets out the department's position. And I think the only thing that I have to add to that is this. And that is that it seems pretty clear that if this resolution is passed as it is worded, and if it is put before the voters and enacted, there is going to be some risk. I don't think anybody can challenge the fact that it causes some risk to the current laws that are on the books. And I guess the question I have is, why do we have to take that risk? Why not say exactly what the legislature means? Why not give the voters clear and specific language that is understandable as to what precisely they are voting on? Shouldn't we give the voters clear language that tells them what this does, and give them the opportunity to make an intelligent choice? Do the voters want to vote on something that runs the risk of having firearms laws struck down, or do the voters want to see something that is going to say we continue to favor reasonable regulation? I think that the 1972 privacy amendment to the Constitution is a good example of what can happen, and I know that's been talked about in the past. When that amendment was enacted, the specific reason for enacting it was in 1972, the Department of Public Safety had put into effect this big computer system that was going to keep track of criminal history records. And because of that, because of the fears engendered by Big Brother keeping watch on people, it was felt necessary to enact a specific privacy amendment. And I believe Representative Duncan from Juno and Representative Miller from Juno were prime movers in that, in getting that privacy amendment enacted. Okay. And I think that then 3 years later we have the Supreme Court, much to everyone's surprise, expanding that privacy provision in a way that no one really expected and that still bothers us today. So I guess my only comment is, if the legislature thinks that it's a good idea to continue to have the authority to make reasonable regulation of firearms, then let's say so in the constitutional provision if it's going to be amended. If not, then I think that that ought to be made clear to the voters. The voters ought to be given a clear choice and a clear understanding of what they're voting on, and it shouldn't be left up in the air to arguments by lawyers on one side versus lawyers on the other side. It ought to be clear what they're voting on. That's all I've got to say. We did make, in that letter setting out our position, three suggestions for possible changes. I believe that Representative Adams's amendment is similar to one of those proposed changes, and I would urge that the committee consider those amendments.
Question. If we adopted any of the language that says subject to reasonable regulation, would it be, in your opinion, constitutional for the municipality of X to prohibit all handguns?
Prohibit all handguns?
Prohibit all handguns with barrels shorter than a foot.
Well, at least
just in a constitutional sense?
I suppose it would depend, first of all, whether we say that the reasonable regulation can only be by state law, or whether we permit some regulation by municipal law. So that's one question. But if you're going to permit some regulation by municipal ordinance, I think that we'd have to analyze whether or not that is that's going to run afoul of this. And it's not something that I could answer right now.
If they did it by proper procedure with all the steps in a row, I mean, my view of reasonable regulation and what I see that happened to statutes is that anything that in some way relates becomes reasonable and is upheld under the legal provisions. Now, under the constitutional provisions, I don't know. I mean, if you're going to say subject to reasonable regulation, then you're certainly allowed for an awful lot of regulation if the reasonable standard is anywhere near the same as in the administrative code.
Well, it seems to me that the legislature could choose, in exercising its rights of reasonable regulation and enacting firearms laws, to say we choose to preempt the field and to not permit municipalities to do X, Y, and Z. And I think that's a choice that the legislature can legitimately make, to preempt the field and say what kinds of laws municipalities ought not to be able to enact and what kind of laws municipalities ought to be able to enact. And again, it's maintaining that power within the legislative arena. And if the choice is to leave it within the state legislative arena, I think that this body can do that. If the choice is to leave some parts of it for local option, let's say, regulation, I think that you can do that as well. I think it's up to the legislature, and I think the legislature could preempt the field.
From another point, you're the one that signed the letter that you got today, so I'll ask you on the first point of your letter, on the prior and current analysis. Number one, now, what are you saying in number one?
What we are saying is that to the extent that there is some fear, and I haven't heard it articulated clearly myself, but to the extent that there is some fear that an interpretation of the Constitution which says that there is only a collective right, in other words, the right belongs to the people generally and not to the people individually, and that as a result of that interpretation, some overregulation of firearms is going to occur. What we are saying is that we do not believe that interpretation will be adopted by the courts of Alaska. That's simply what we're saying.
Is it your belief then that the constitutional provision currently does state that the militia case is one point, but that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right now?
I'm not saying that specific holding would or would not be made. What I'm saying is that I don't believe that, based on how the Alaska Supreme Court would interpret that, I don't believe that they would permit anything that might be considered an unreasonable regulation of firearms.
On what basis?
For the reasons we've set out here.
On the basis of the constitutional provision?
On the basis of the constitutional provision and how
with regard to individual rights.
Well, on the basis of the Alaska constitutional provision, the history of firearms use in Alaska, the history of fairly wide open firearms use in Alaska. The Alaska Supreme Court, when it interprets the Alaska Constitution and applies it to specific laws, doesn't do so in a vacuum. If you read some of the opinions, they always go back into history establishing a right to counsel for the criminal defendants. They looked at the historical provisions in looking at a number of constitutional provisions. They go back and look at what the history has been in Alaska of the exercise of this particular right. And I think that in doing that, the Alaska Supreme Court is going to do so in a way that preserves some of the uses of firearms and carrying of firearms that have been traditional. Now, what that means is that to the extent the legislature starts over-regulating firearms, it's our position that the Alaska Supreme Court may very well prevent that over-regulation, and so that some of the concerns expressed by the proponents will be satisfied.
Well, it's hard to make both arguments in the same letter. And your first point essentially makes the argument that really this is all unnecessary because the Supreme Court is not going to allow regulation of the possession or abuse of firearms by individuals in any way that it already isn't doing it. It seems to be what you're saying. And yet the other points in the same letter come back and say, but if you enumerate this right, which we say is really there, then you're going to get in trouble and we may find reasonable regulations struck down, such as some that may already exist. And
well,
it's hard to go forward when we don't know where we're starting. I guess that's the problem with every time we consider this resolution, we always start out with the debate as to whether or not the existing right is a right or is in fact a collective right of militia, which is worthless to individuals.
Well, I'm not sure quite how to respond to that. I guess there has always been the philosophical argument whether such a constitutional amendment is necessary and whether or not the current constitution adequately protects individual rights, or whether reasonable regulation would be permitted under an amendment. And I guess my feeling is that if there's some question as to whether or not we need a constitutional amendment, then there's a question as to whether or not we ought to wait and see if something bad happens under the current scheme. I mean, I have not been pointed to anything in particular that is so objectionable under the current regulatory scheme that justifies amending the Constitution. Given that, our position is we ought to maintain the status quo.
I guess it occurs to me then that the real bottom line question to this whole issue is, what does our Constitution really say? Has anybody ever litigated that or tried to find out what our Constitution really says?
Let me, as a lawyer, ask another question to Dean. We've worked together for you. Dean, would you agree, this is a legal question, would you agree that the probable majority's view on whether the Second Amendment is a collective or individual right is weighted towards the viewpoint that it is collective? As an attorney and scholar viewing the law through court decisions, the commentaries, and the various law reviews,
I think that's a fair reading. The question is what does that mean, and the question is, by saying it's collective, what does that prohibit the individual from doing? And I suppose the question could be asked, what is the individual prohibited from doing now under Alaska law that is objectionable to most reasonable people?
I'm just trying to give Senator Alford his starting point.
Well, let's look at it a different way. You know, and each time this is considered, the opponents offer amendments which say reasonable, and they modify everything with reasonable or reasonable regulation, which really a right protected under reasonable regulation is no longer a right. And it wouldn't be if it were the right to free speech, and it wouldn't be if it were the right to a lot
freedom
of other
religion, freedom of assembly.
You know, once you add those modifiers, you've done away with it. So that method of dealing with the things that we all agree with, because nobody is arguing against felon in possession, incapacitated or minors, or carrying concealed on the person. Now, I know some states in going through this battle that's been essentially nationwide on constitutions, and some of them are much, much stronger than ours and haven't ever had a problem. I mean, it just flat out says it's an individual right, and yet they also have control of concealed weapons. But what about the Idaho approach, or something somewhere between the approach that's in this bill initially and the Idaho approach, which essentially says, but this shall not be construed to limit or to guarantee the right of possession by felons or incapacitated persons or the right to carry concealed.
That's, right now, that's similar to the House resolution language.
I'm not sure what the House is.
I think that is similar. I think that's a step in the right direction, but unfortunately, by enumerating those specific things that could be regulated, you leave out a number of potential problem areas that that might not be subject to regulation. And I think we've set out a couple, like possessing firearms in a place where alcohol is served or sold. I mean, that wasn't one of the two or three things that you specifically set out, yet it is covered under current law, and who knows how that would fare. I mean, I'm not certain right now whether we as prosecutors could prove that there is a compelling and overriding state interest in prohibiting people from walking into liquor stores with firearms that would override some sort of constitutional right. I'm not certain how the courts would come out on that point. I mean, if the person isn't drunk and they've got a firearm, can we prove a compelling state interest in keeping them out of liquor stores? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But once you've enumerated a couple of things that can't be done, that means that everything else goes by the wayside.
You mean even if it didn't say that, you could still do it if you could prove a compelling state interest?
I believe that most constitutional rights can be overridden by a sufficiently compelling state interest. That was the test that the Supreme Court applied in the Raven decision on use of marijuana. In other words, we could not prove a compelling and overriding state interest to regulate the private use of marijuana by an adult in their own home. If we could have done that, we would have been able to prohibit it. And the court reached a different conclusion a few years later in the case of Erickson versus State on the question of cocaine. They found that there was a sufficiently compelling state interest in prohibiting cocaine so that same privacy right didn't allow you to possess cocaine in your house. So that's the kind of analysis that I think would be applied, and I'm just not sure what the result would be in when you take specific uses of firearms in specific places, on school grounds. I mean, the couple of examples I gave in the letter, on school grounds and government buildings. I mean, I think the legislature ought to be able to say we don't want anybody coming into this building with firearms. But proving a compelling and overriding state interest to do that, I'm not certain that would be constitutional under a change to the Constitution such as reflected in the resolution.
Is there a law that says you can't come into this building with firearms right now?
I don't know that.
There isn't a law, but there is a regulation, and people have been turned down with firearms without any law. I don't know what they use, but I know they've done it.
Senator Rohde?
No questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's see, back to our list here. I think we have Dick Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dick Bishop. I live in Fairbanks, near Fairbanks. I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Outdoor Council, for whom I'm lobbying part of the time this year. The Alaska Outdoor Council has consistently supported this type of amendment to the Constitution of the state. Most of the reasons have already been stated, and I don't think I need to review them. I have to say that in listening to the discussion, I find it very interesting and a little frightening, frankly. I probably am at a disadvantage from having a relatively uninitiated view of this whole matter as a layman, as an outdoorsman, and representing outdoorsmen, and I'd like to represent or make some comments reflecting that. I appreciate the virtue of clear language. I've been involved in some issues that make me appreciate it even more as time goes on. to me, as an individual, not speaking on behalf of the council, although their support of this amendment suggests that it's pretty clear to them, I believe this is clear language. I think that in the question, first let me address the matter of legislative authority. We have a constitution that has many provisions with regard to the rights and privileges and actions and operations of people within the state. And offhand, and again, I have to admit that I'm not necessarily well-versed, I don't know of any provision of the Constitution offhand that prohibits the legislature from exerting its authority under the terms of that Constitution. It seems to me that that's a basic tenet of how things work. Now, there may be things that I'm unaware of, and I have not seen the amendment that Senator Adams has, so I can't comment on it. But I guess in my simple-minded assessment of this, if you have the Constitution, then the next step is that within the bounds of that Constitution, it's a given that the legislature has the authority to enact legislation to carry out the intent of that Constitution. And to me, that should be very clear. Maybe it's not as clear as it seems to be. In any case, whatever that situation may be, I do believe that a basic consideration is that the laws of this country and of this state are by and large intended, and the foundation of the country and the state are intended to protect the individual rights. And I would simply recommend that in cases where there may be some doubt about the degree to which a law enables or protects individual rights, that if there's an error, that error should be in favor of individual rights. That basically what this country is founded on is individual rights, and that they should not be unduly restricted, and it's worth some risk to protect those individual rights in the first place, and if necessary, because of some compelling societal reason, then perhaps they have to be constrained in some respect. But the basic tenet should be to protect the individual rights of Americans and Alaskans. And I think that's what we're talking about here. It's obvious that the Department of Law and others have not been able to tell you just exactly what the present language of the Constitution means in terms of individual rights. And that's the part of it that really scares me. I think if there is a reason for doubt, then please err on the side of individual rights and address the common good if the problem arises. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you. Questions by members of the committee. Senator Adams.
Yes. Do you know of any Alaskans' rights that has been denied for legitimate purposes of bearing guns here in Alaska?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to say offhand, I do not at this time. And again, I may be unaware of
then the argument that there is nothing broken in the state of Alaska, there is no reason to have this piece of legislation. But unless we wanted to roll in subsistence and bear an arm to go subsist or something like that, but perhaps we can think of an amendment that we can work on, Dick.
Spears.
I think we'd have a really interesting proposition, Mr. Chairman, if we put those two together. I think I might belatedly try to take up the profession of law, because I think it would last as long as I were pursuing that combined issue.
It would certainly confuse some constituencies.
Thank you, Dick.
Senator Rohde, did you have a question?
No questions.
If there's no further questions, thank you, Dick.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to make one other comment in response to Senator Adams, and that is, as Mr. Andrews said, if a past attorney general had not raised this issue, I don't think we'd be here proposing that there be a change. But former Attorney General Gorsuch did raise the issue and said, as has been discussed, that there's a question. And given that that has been raised, we really feel that it's important to address it. Thank you.
That's what past attorney generals get, said. No further questions by members of the committee? Is there anyone else here to testify on this legislation?
no testimony, Mr. Chairman, but Senator Collins and I have the same amendment. We'd like to hold it on the desk so that Senator Rohde, the sponsor of this legislation, may have a chance to look at it in the public.
I've looked at it.
It is not my intention, and I can count that we move this legislation today. And we will take it up again, and we'll have Senator Adams amendments. Also, I would encourage members to take a look at the list that you have in your packet that's all states' constitutional provisions. I don't know which one it is here. But we do have a list that's got constitutional provisions in every state. And some of them are amazingly simple, straightforward, and very individual.
And have been around for 150 years.
And have never caused a problem. Others are very convoluted. I think Idaho tried to do what we're trying to do and went through a laundry list that's inconclusive, incomplete, but still very long. You know, somewhere in that, I don't know how to describe the list, but somewhere in there, there might be something that contains a grain of some good ideas, so I would encourage members to look at that. But I do think that once you modify a right, you have come very close to annihilating the right, and I'm not interested in passing out a piece of legislation that really does nothing. Because at least right now, there's an argument that it's already an individual right. And if we, as we can see, the Department of Law and the Department of Public Safety already disagree on that, so there's at least a chance.
Mr. Chairman, I haven't visited this issue, I think, to the frequency that the members have been sitting in this committee have, but I guess what it, as I listen to the arguments on both sides of it, the biggest problem seems to be clarity. I don't think that problem is that I don't have any problem with an individual's right to bear arms, but I do have a concern that if in fact, as you stated, that as soon as we begin to regulate a right, and it no longer is a right, if in fact we are already regulating gun control to a degree when we as a state see fit, in fact, we have already obliterated that right. So the other side of the argument then is that if we then pass a constitutional amendment that says, in fact, it is a right, an individual right, then in fact what we are doing is doing away with our ability to regulate it, and that's a concern, so it's kind of a catch-22. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be an issue of trying to come up with a way to recognize the fact that these individuals do have that right, but at the same time providing some protection if in fact the public good is not served by some of the results of clarifying or institutionalizing that right. And I guess what I can't help but think of is that when our founding fathers wrote the Constitution, and I think we had a different population than we have today. I don't know that we had the crime rate that we have now. I'm assuming, and I'm
they all had guns and they shot the people who tried to rob them.
So it's so I mean I think things were different, but I think the social fabric was different at the time, and I think there was a lot of self-regulation that occurred that we in our society no longer have, and I think for me that's the concern.
Thank you. I think that will take time.
Different subject? Are we done with this?
Okay. The bill will be on our calendar for when we can get back to it.
Okay.
Senator Adams.
Yes. Legislative Affairs have the annual report on court's decision and the opinions of the Attorney General. There's a section up there that has recommendations that are unclear. Is this committee, or is it up to you, Mr. Chair, the committee as a whole look at those recommendations? Or is it up to each individual member on this Judiciary Committee to make recommendations?
Why don't we look at them, and if there's enough interest, we'll have a hearing and go through them together.
Okay.
I've looked at them, and there are corrective steps that should be taken to clarify either ambiguous statutes or gaps in the existing statutes. No, it's, as Senator Adams pointed out, the Legislative Affairs Department published a compendium of Supreme Court decisions that noted areas in which the legislature should consider action.
Okay. You want to take it up?
Yes.
Okay. Let's schedule it.
Schedule it. I already have a dog-eared copy.
Okay. Good. Further business to come before the committee? Thank you very much. We're adjourned.